Welcome to Conversations for a Brave New World with Donna, Sonia and Cliff, where we bring you a global, national and local focus on gender, sexuality and feminism.
A recent study by Charles Sturt showed that LGBT people who live in rural and regional communities experience poorer psychological well-being than those who live in the cities. A main contributing factor to this is the need to constantly hide your identity. Now, in rural communities, there aren't many openly public gay spaces or queer spaces that LGBT people can use. There is very limited opportunity for LGBT people to socialize and interact with each other. And there's also a sense of invisibility. This invisibility comes from this notion that, well, I can't be myself in a rural or regional community. And if I am, and if I tell people that I'm LGBT, I'm going to be harassed. I'm going to be, worse still, physically assaulted. These are all real risk factors LGBT people in rural communities have to weigh up in deciding whether they can be themselves. And what research has proven is that this has a huge detrimental impact on their well-being. This month, to talk about this, I'm joined by Dr. Ruby Grant from La Trobe and Gavin Prendergast from ACON. Ruby Grant is a scholar researching LGBT inclusion in rural regional communities at Arches. Ruby, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? What got you interested in this kind of work? What are you seeing in your research?
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Cliff. It's a pleasure to chat with you about the work. So I'm a sociologist by training. I live in Tasmania, and I've worked at the University of Tasmania for a number of years before coming to La Trobe. And my area of interest broadly is in lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans and queer health, community health and well-being. I've done a bit of work on mental health and substance use. I guess a thread that was coming through my work was about an interest in the role of place and space and how people feel a sense of belonging in place and then where they live. And that really comes from my own personal experience of, growing up in a rural area in Tassie and always having a really strong sense of connection to this place, a pride in living in this beautiful, beautiful place. But really growing up in a time where living in a rural area, and in Tasmania specifically, there was a real sense if you're young and cool and queer, that you would grow up and move away. Like, you've got to move to the mainland to live a good life or to be successful and maybe come back to Tassie to grow old, but you wouldn't want to have a life. I really wanted to dedicate my, career to exploring, the strengths of the communities in rural areas in Tasmania and Tasmania as a whole. So I ended up doing a lot of work. My PhD was around bisexual young women living in Tasmania, their sense of identity and community connection to the place, but also experiences around access to health services there as well. Yeah, so it really set the foundations for my career in terms of looking at LGBTQ people in rural communities and place and space.
Now, what are you finding there, right? Bisexuality, actually, let's start with that. It's a very different concept to what most people think about LGBT. Like, I think there is this common imagination that if you're part of the LGBT community, you're probably trans, gay, or lesbian. The bisexuals, unfortunately, get missed out a lot. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what bisexuality means and what are you seeing with bisexual women?
People have different definitions of what it means to be bisexual, and that has changed over time. But broadly, it refers to different forms of attraction. So whether it be romantic, sexual attraction to people of the same gender as you or a similar gender as you and other genders. So it can be more than one. It's not necessarily, you're attracted to men and women. It can be, your gender and other genders, but it means something different to different people. A big part, and I guess because of that and the fluidity of that, bisexual people, or we might call it bi plus people, because it can also encompass people who are pansexual, so people who are attracted to people regardless of their gender, and a bunch of other fluid identities that we have. There's a sort of umbrella term, which is plurisexual, so you're attracted to multiple genders. And so because of the fluidity of that, we bisexual or bi plus people will actually make up the majority of people within the LGBTQ plus community. But it's so interesting that, as you said, the needs and experiences of bi plus people are rarely, at the forefront of conversations when it comes to LGBTQ issues. As you said, there's a lot of focus of the original gay and lesbian, and of course the ongoing challenges that those part of the community face, and increasingly focus on trans people. But of course, trans people, a majority of trans people do identify as bi plus. So there is a real need for more research in this space, which is something that my earlier work really touched on. And I wanted to focus on bi plus women, especially in that work, because I mean, I'm a bi plus woman myself, so I had a personal connection to that. But it was just something that actually came up in my PhD, which is a kind of funny story, because I was young and naive and doing my PhD, and I was like, I want to do a study about lesbian sexual health, this will be great. And when I then put the call out to be like, hey, I'm doing a study and I'm recruiting participants for my PhD study about, I think it was about same-sex attracted women or something like that. And no lesbians actually participated in the study. They were all bi, pan or queer young women. And that that really speaks, I know you're going to ask why, well, what's going on there? It really does speak to a generational shift, or especially at that time, a lot of more and more young women, especially understanding sexuality and gender in more fluid ways. It's not to say that lesbian identities are not significant and still really important and resonate with younger generations, but we just do see a higher percentage of people who are younger identifying as bisexual, pansexual and queer. So that was sort of some of the factors behind why my earlier work did focus on bi plus young women. So it was interesting because at that time, so it was 2015, a little while ago now, but there was very much a sense of, like, if we're talking about LGBTQ inclusion or making our communities and particularly health services LGBTQ friendly, really a lot of the focus is on gay and lesbian at that point, really. So it was, and even within that, it was mostly gay friendly. So if a service had a rainbow sticker on their window, it would be, they really are saying they're gay friendly. They're not. And what I found in talking to young bisexual women who live in rural and regional Tasmania, as part of that work, that was very much their experience, where they would go to a health service or a GP clinic for routine healthcare, and we have some cases of discrimination or just, poor treatment if they talked about themselves as being bisexual, because there's just not a lot of understanding about the specific experiences and needs of that community. And that's what, especially in rural and regional areas, I think, because it's not an identity that has been especially visible or celebrated in most spaces. And so it can, be really challenging for that community to access care and to have a sense of, sometimes a sense of pride because of that lack of visibility or focus for the community. So, some real challenges there, but I think there's improvement in that space since that time.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think it's an interesting situation because, we grew up in a world where heterosexuality is the norm. If you are bi, you would feel heterosexual attraction too, or what might be perceived outwardly as heterosexual attraction. So I can understand the internal confusion of, well, I feel that way. What am I within that environment, being particularly heightened when you think about rural regional communities? Do you want to tell us a little bit about what's going on with rural regional communities? Are we, where does the rainbow communities fit in? How are they doing in these places?
It's important not to take a kind of homogenous or stereotypical view of rural communities and what it means to, like, ruralness, because lots of different rural communities have a very different flavour. But in general, a lot of research has explored the ways in which the sort of culture of rural communities can sometimes be fairly traditional or conservative in terms of gender norms and roles, especially if you're thinking about, communities that have been centered around agricultural labor, where farm ownership, where there's there's some very typical kind of gender norms around, the husband is the farmer and working the land, and the rural femininities might be very much about being the sort of the wife and mother caring kind of role, which we actually don't necessarily see that always play out in practice, right? I mean, some of the most staunch women I know are, tough farming women in rural Tassie. Anyway, because of these sort of traditional, often conservative ideas around gender and in rural areas, LGBTQ people can often feel and do have lived experience of incredible discrimination and social isolation in rural communities. And that can be really exacerbated by what we call social proximity in rural areas. So if you live in a small town where there's, you know, not that many people, you can, you know, everyone knows everyone. That's the kind of vibe, and it can be very then isolating within that if you feel that you don't fit in with the norms in that area. So we do see quite significant rates of mental ill health and think even going right through to suicidal ideation in rural communities, particularly among younger people. So it is something that we've really had to grapple with within our communities, in rural communities and LGBTQ communities within those places. But I think also, I mean, increasingly, so there is still work to be done in terms of making rural communities inclusive and accepting of diversity. But I think it's important not to lose sight of the strengths that rural communities do have. And I mean, I'm seeing some amazing stuff just here in Tasmania. Some of the most amazing community shows of community support are in some of the most rural and remote parts. So if I'm thinking of the northwest of Tasmania, where during Pride Month, which is June, in the northwest of Tassie, there's a group called Northwest Pride, where they had LGBTQ events every single day of the month. And I think that's really speaks to the strengths of rural communities, where because of that close social proximity, you know, people are used to pitching in and helping out each other. And there is a level of acceptance. It's sort of like, you know, doesn't matter who you are, if what your background is, but if you're from here, or if you're here and you're part of the community, sometimes there's a level of acceptance there, which can be harnessed to really support people from different backgrounds, which is awesome to see in practice. So there's great work happening in this space, and I'm sure is the case all around the country too. But I guess it's important to also not lose sight of the work that is still needed to be done to help and support LGBTQ plus people in those areas.
Look, I think it's a perfect spot to acknowledge. Yes, definitely. There is change happening. And what bothers me is very often rural places are constructed as these places where gay people can't belong. And there is some reality to that as well. Like, I still do hear horrific stories about, you know, what happens in some places. But for the most part, there is that changing tide. There is this appetite of embracing, and, you know, rural communities can provide that by being small, close-knit and caring. I remember doing a study not so long ago, and someone said to me, I felt more unsafe and at risk in the city because I was anonymous. But at least here I have my community around me, and they're all, you know, like, being gay, they've surrounded me, they've embraced me, and I feel more seen. So
absolutely. That's
as
wonderful.
A queer person, that's such so affirming, isn't it?
Totally. Because, I mean, connection to place and community is super important. Like, we shouldn't put sexuality or gender or, you know, your identity as LGBTQ necessarily as above your, like, you might have a strong connection to place. And we've seen that, you know, I've always been really inspired by the early activism of LGBTQ rights activists here in Tasmania, where a big part of their activism was, I mean, in the 80s, there was, I think, the premier of Tasmania at the time, during the sort of decriminalisation of homosexuality debates, was kind of like, if you're gay, you should go to Sydney where you belong. Like, you're not welcome here. And people who have a strong sense of community, especially in rural parts of Tasmania, that's horrible to be told that. I think it's great to see that the tide turning in that space. In fact, I think urban suburban areas have a lot to learn from the strengths of rural communities in supporting, in creating that sense of place and space that it is really beneficial for people. I mean, a few years ago, I did a study it sort of followed on from my PhD work, which looked at younger people. I did a study that was funded by the Australian Lesbian Medical Association, and it looked at older lesbians' experiences of ageing in rural communities in Tasmania. And it was a wonderful project because it really captured that sense of that rural communities can actually be a really positive place to grow old. There's a lot of health benefits and community benefits from living in rural communities. Closeness to nature is just super nice for a lot of people. And it was great to explore as part of that project where we actually see the reverse kind of migration, where we often assume that, you know, if you're LGBTQ, like, you know, maybe you grew up in a rural area or a small town, but, you know, you come out and you move to the city. Whereas in that project, project with older lesbians, it was often the case that these were people who had lived their whole lives in the city, and now that they were retiring, they're moving to a rural area. And that could be really positive in terms of their like being accepted as openly lesbian, often couples in small towns. Sometimes it was a challenging, especially in terms of access to inclusive healthcare. If you've lived in inner city Sydney most of your life and been able to benefit from the really visible LGBTQ inclusion and, you know, lots of community venues and inclusive health services. But then if you've moved to a small town of, you know, 4,000 people in rural, you know, East Coast Tasmania or something, it can be a bit of a shock to then be like, oh, actually, even though we might be being so fairly socially accepted, there's still the barriers, structural barriers to healthcare and other services that anyone in rural areas face, but is especially pronounced if you're then unsure about if that service, the one doctor in town, is going to be inclusive of you. So it is, there's some barriers there that we still need to address. But that project did really show that there are real benefits, and it can be really a wonderful experience to move to a rural area as an older person.
Definitely. And, you know, I suppose to end on a pathway of hope, I suppose, what would you say to rural communities?
I think anyone can take from this that being willing to listen and learn and to embrace diversity and difference, and not to assume or to think that maybe if there's people with different experiences to you, or someone who looks different who's moving into your town, that necessarily not to take that as a threat or as something that's going to make your area not as good a place to live in. Like, that's there's real benefits from that diversity that everyone can make the most of, and it makes our communities stronger, it makes them even better places to be. So really embracing the folks that are in your town and learning from them, I think that's a really, really important in terms of embracing change.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ruby, for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Cliff. It was great to chat.
Now I'm joined by Gavin, who's the Manager of Regional Outreach at ACON, Australia's largest LGBT advocacy organisation. Gavin, you work in the regional context. Why is that important? What's going on with the LGBT people in rural regional communities?
Hey, Cliff. Thank you so much for having me on. I think it's important that as a LGBT organization that looks after the holistic health of our community, I think it's really important that we bring along our regional brothers and sisters and cousins and make sure that all of the state is looked after. So just to backtrack a little bit, ACON is a New South Wales based LGBT health organization. So a lot of the stuff that we do is city centric, but it's vitally important that we look after and look to the regions for people who are on a gender journey, or who have sexuality or gender diverse, or who just have questions about, you know, life as a queer person who live outside of the big urban cities and areas in New South Wales.
And in your work, do you see that disparity between what's happening in urban versus what's happening in rural? Like, why does ACON have a rural specific focus?
Well, we do. We know that regional people suffer disparities around access to health services, to access to community groups and visibility and inclusion. It's a bit easier for the people that live in the cities, the queer communities that live in the cities. There's a lot of different services and activities and community that they can connect in with. And we see that sometimes in regional areas, there is that disparity that exists. So ACON is there, I guess, to kind of fill the gap, or to help fill the gap. It's not all on us, but, you know, we work alongside community groups, service providers, local health districts. We want to make sure that we are a conduit between the queer communities that live in regional areas and with the services that look after them, like your local sexual health clinic or your mental health service or the drug and alcohol clinic. You know, we want to make sure that our regional queer people are connected and feel that they can easily reach out to or easily access services that are a little bit easier to get in touch with in the city.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Acorn does and, any of our LGBT family listening right now, if they need support, well, how can they get in contact with Acorn?
Yeah, of course, mate. So we have a really wide like breadth of services and projects and connections that the people who live in regional areas can connect into. Thankfully, most of it is also available online. So we have telehealth, we have really amazing online platforms that people can connect into. I guess so. Just to go back to the n nuts and bolts of Acorn, we began as a HIV, as a response to HIV. When things were really bad back in the 80s, when people were dying of AIDS, Acorn grew as a grassroots response to a massive gap for the people that were suffering or dying of AIDS back then. And since then, we've grown quite dramatically, and we're much more of a holistic LGBT community health organization. But the nuts and bolts of what we do is still HIV. So we have a bunch of platforms that people can connect into. Ending HIV, Emanate, there's peer education platforms, and ASTART, which is a peer support workshop for gay men who are recently diagnosed with HIV. So there's our bread and butter is HIV stuff. But from there, we also branch out, and we talk about improving LGBTQ health through client-centered care programs and services. So that's where we talk about our counseling teams, other support services, drug and alcohol, mental health. It's really quite broad. So I can give a link at the end of this session that people can go to the Acorn website and have a look at all the different types of support services and projects that we have available. There's a lot. So I'm hopeful that if we do have any queer people or LGBTQ people that are listening in, that they can, if they have questions, they can go and have a squiz at our website and have a look at what we offer.
Fantastic. That link will be in the description of the episode on the radio station as well as on our podcast. Gavin, my final question to you, I suppose, is what advice would you have for young queer people in rural regional communities? We still hear stories of this disparity. We still hear some really scary stories about prejudice, discrimination. But we also hear the beautiful stories of how communities have come together, like Hay, like Wagga, and others. What advice would you have to young people who are trying to work out where they fit in, who they are?
Yeah, that's a great question, Cliff. I think one of the main drivers of growing up queer or different or gay or lesbian or trans is trying to find your tribe. And I think at the end of the day, that's probably the best piece of advice I can give. You know, you can use platforms like Acorn to guide your way through to get good advice on sexuality and health. How to look after yourself in a holistic way. But I think finding a tribe or your chosen family is probably one of the best things about being queer. You get to choose your family, which is pretty cool. So for any young people listening that might be struggling or who might be, questioning the point of it all, hang in there and keep looking until you find people like you that end up becoming your family and give you a real, focus on life and a real reason for living. I found my tribe. I remember going through the dark days of being a young gay man and not really knowing where I was going, feeling a little bit, clueless or rudderless, really. But then slowly piecing together my queer family. And they came across the board, gays, lesbians, trans, gender diverse friends that I now consider my family. I think my main piece of advice is find your tribe. So through your local community groups, through events like Wagga Mardi Gras or Hay Mardi Gras, Albury Wodonga, there's hubs that the larger regional cities have hubs of communities where my advice would be just check in there, go and have a look at their Facebook pages or their Instagram accounts, reach out, say hello, and connect that way because, your life turns around when you find that chosen family. You it's almost like a second lease on life. I know I'm being I sound quite dramatic about it, but it really is, for some people, it's life changing and life saving. So yeah, find your people is my advice.
Absolutely. And I think what I will point out, knowing what happens within rural regional communities at times, is there's no really one form of queer. There's no one version of queer. It's just such a diverse, like the shades of the rainbow.
Exactly.
And there are tribes and people that are going to welcome you in each of those shades. So always feel free to reach out and, check out the great work ACON is doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I just would encourage people to go to the ACON website. There's so many different platforms within the ACON website. For example, we've got TransHub, which is this beautiful platform that really delves into the whole trans and gender experience. You can go in as a newcomer, somebody who's thinking about their gender. You can go in as an ally or a parent or a friend. And there's bits from that website which will speak to each of you about how to look after yourself and live your truest, most authentic life. We have a regional part of the website as well. So on there, we talk about the community events and ways that you can connect with your communities in regional areas. So yeah, go and have a squeeze. It's really quite detailed, and there's a lot in there. But like we said, we'll add the link into the description of this episode so people can delve a little bit deeper.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Gavin. I really appreciate you taking time to join me today.
Thanks, Cleve. Thanks for having me on board, and thank you to all your listeners.
I'm now joined by my co-host, Donna and Sonia. Both our speakers alluded to how rural LGBT people still experience those different and negative outcomes compared to those who are in metro or city locations. What stood out to you from that interview?
I suppose what stood out for me, Cliff, is that there have been a lot of changes. There's a great deal of acceptance of gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans people in Australia that we didn't even have 20 years ago. So there's been a lot of social changes, a lot of acceptance. The very famous social commentator Clive Hamilton says that the LGBTQ plus movement has probably been one of the most influential and successful social movements in Australia of all time. I disagree with him on that, but I do agree with a lot of what he's saying there. However, I also think that there have been some turns towards the conservative in rural areas. I know that in our area here in Bathurst, there was a swing to the right in the last election, and we're already right. And often right-wing politics are conservative politics, and they're not inclusive.
Absolutely. And I think that's probably something that everyone's concerned with recent elections overseas as well. But whilst we've had this progress in acceptance, or rather this progress in representation and legal wins like same-sex marriage rights, I've often debated about whether that's actually acceptance or tolerance, because you can be tolerated because laws say you're not allowed to discriminate. But are people genuinely accepted to be themselves and to display their identities in rural regional communities? One thing that stuck out to me with a lot of my research is this notion that you've got to hide yourself and hide your identity so you do not make other people feel uncomfortable. And so you have agency on your own self. Should something bad happen, you've got agency to protect yourself and you're not a victim. So it's this weird sort of catch that happens within rural communities that are still transitioning, but yet have these remnants of prejudice and a past of conservatism.
Well, that's right. And it reminds me of 20, 30 years ago where people would say that they weren't homophobic. They don't mind gays as long as gays don't act gay in public. And I think there's still a bit of that in rural areas, but it tends to be confined to only some parts of the population. So they're those more conservative members. And sometimes they're like the older men. They'll give people dirty looks as they're going down the road, act disgusted, if they see people holding hands that are same-sex couples and so on. But I think there's large parts of the population that don't tolerate that anymore in our regions.
What about your thoughts, Sonia? I think, what stood out to you about queer people's lives in rural regional communities?
I think we have come a long way, and I think, your concerns, Cliff, about tolerance versus acceptance, that they're genuinely real. I think there is a lot more tolerance, and I think there is a lot more acceptance. So those are working towards both positive directions, which I think are good. But I think, if you had a chart that showed the proportion of each, I think we are swinging more towards acceptance more so than what we ever have been. I think people start off as tolerant before they become accepting. It's a learning process, so that's something that happens.
Things are definitely changing, and these elements of prejudice are fewer and far between. Why this is important to be positive about this is because we don't want to portray a world of hate and prejudice in rural communities for all the young people coming out. There are still groups that are supportive. There are still people that are supportive. There are heaps of allies out there that people can reach out to. Fantastic. So thank you all for listening. This is our last episode of 2024. Join us again next year for another take of a conversation for a brave new world.
Thanks, Cliff.
See you. Thanks, Cliff. See you all next year.
Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by the Gender Network. To get involved or find out more, simply Google the Gender Network at Charles Sturt.